Translation: Your Majesty Maharaj Parikshit, know that all that I have described in reply to your proper inquiry is just according to the version of the Vedas, and it is eternal truth. This was described personally by Lord Krishna unto Brahma, with whom the Lord was satisfied upon being properly worshipped. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, Jai Shri Shri Radha Gokulananda, Sitarama Sundarama, Sita Gauri Thakurana. The two different ways of reaching the spiritual sky and thereby getting emancipation from the material bondage, namely either the direct process of reaching the kingdom of God or the gradual process through the other higher planets of the universe, are set forth according to the version of the Vedas. This refers to the previous text that we've been studying on this, if you go back to the previous message. The Vedic versions in this connection are Yada Sarva Pramuchanyante Karma Yesya Hride Sharitaha Ato Matyo Mitto Bhavat Atra Brahma Samanute Brihat Arangaha Upat. Something, I think it was Upanishad 447, and Te Ricci Abhi Samhavani Brihat Arunyaka Upanishad 6215. Those who are free from all material desires, which are diseases of the heart, are able to conquer death and enter into the kingdom of God through the archiplanets. These Vedic versions corroborate the version of the Srimad Bhagavatam, and the latter is further confirmed by Sukadeva Goswami, who affirms that the truth was disclosed by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Krishna, Vasudev, to Brahma, the first authority in the Vedas. The disciplic succession holds that the Vedas are uttered by Lord Krishna to Brahma, by Brahma to Narad, and by Narad to Vyasadeva, and then by Vyasadeva to Sukadeva Goswami, and so on. So there is no difference between the versions of all the authorities. The truth is eternal, and as such, there cannot be any new opinion about the truth. That is the way of knowing the knowledge contained in the Vedas. It is not a thing to be understood by one's erudite scholarship or by one's fashionable interpretation of mundane scholars. There is nothing to be added and nothing to be subtracted, because the truth is the truth. One has to accept, after all, some authority. The modern scientists are also authorities for the common man for some scientific truths. The common man follows the version of the scientists. This means that the common men follow the authority. The Vedic knowledge is also received in that way. The common man cannot argue about what is beyond the sky or beyond the universe. He must accept the versions of the Vedas as they are understood by the authorized disciplic succession. In the Bhagavad Gita, also the same process of understanding the Gita is stated in the fourth chapter. If one does not follow the authoritative version of the Acharyas, he will vainly search after the truth mentioned in the Vedas. Omagyana tamon vishyagyanam jarashalakaya chakshusumilatam dena tasmai sivirvenima sri chaitanamana vishtam stavitam yunavutare swayam rupa ganamayam Dharam ti swapana tukami. Namo om Vishnu Vadaya Krishna Prasthaya Vidalaya Smadishwara Vinda Swami Nitti Namane. Namo om Vishnu Vadaya Krishna Prasthaya Vidalaya Shimate Shila Maktavananda Swami Nitti Namane. Namaste Sarasati Devam Gauravani Vachane Nivishisha Shunyavari Prasthitadishthane. So this is quite interesting, as everything in the Bhagavatam is interesting. It is knowledge. So I'll make some interesting points here. We'll go to the, I need to see the we can go to the latter part first, perhaps, of this purport. So one point we could say here is there's nothing to be added or subtracted to the truth. But one thing we can understand about absolute truth, particularly the Srimad Bhagavatam, is that the pure Vaishnava acharyas, they can actually extract various meanings from the scriptures. If a pure devotee, according to time, place, and circumstances, will draw out certain things in the Bhagavatam which is necessary to be understood in a particular time period. Rupa Goswami and our acharyas have drawn out many different aspects of Leela and pastimes, elaborating upon the texts of the Bhagavatam. And this is a very important point, because the pure devotee who is Omagyanam Turandrasya Gyananjana Shalaka, he's very pure. Omtavishru Paramambasam Sadas Prasanti Surya and Chakshu Shimiratangin and what's that? Premanjana Churita Bhakti Balochanena Santa Sadevu Rideshu Balochanti Sham Sham. One who has pure love for Krishna, he sees the world, and he also sees the pastimes of Krishna in certain ways according to his own consciousness, because everyone in the spiritual world has a certain rasa with Krishna. So one particular leela or pastime going on in the spiritual realm, one particular devotee may have a particular insight into that aspect of the leelas. Therefore, you will find, for instance, in the Ujjvala Nilamani by Rupa Goswami, so many pastimes are described, the different things that are said among Krishna's devotees, the gopis and the cowherd boys. And you won't find that in the Bhagavatam, but you will find it there. Because Rupa Goswami is none other than Rupa Manjari. So these great souls have descended into this realm from the spiritual realm. Goloka Premadana Harinam Sankirtan, the holy name has ascended, and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has brought all his associates. Raghunath Das Goswami, in his Mana Shiksha, he says, you should always remember Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, because as non-different than Krishna. Sri Krishna Chaitanya Vade Krishna Nahiranda. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he has descended into this realm and he has come to teach what no one else has ever taught, which is the divine realm of Gokul, the residence of Vrindavan. So this is elaborated on, so although nothing is added or subtracted, some senses it is, nothing is subtracted, but sometimes things are added, and therefore it is said Prabhupada has touched upon certain topics in this Bhagavatam, because if Prabhupada wanted to, he could go on and on and on and elaborating it, and the Bhagavatam would be so huge. You can see, for instance, some of Prabhupada's purports in comparison to Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Maharaj's purports, there's a great elaboration. If you read Prabhupada's Bhagavad Gita as it is. He brought that Bhagavad Gita to the Western audience. Therefore, he had to bring so many other topics within his purport so the Western audience can understand. But if you get the translation of Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Maharaj's Bhagavad Gita and his purports, you will find that he doesn't elaborate so much on Sutta, but he sticks to the basics of what Krishna is saying throughout the Bhagavad Gita. Sometimes that's helpful for a devotee to follow the thread of what Krishna is trying to speak. So in the Vedas, the pure Vaishnava, he is elaborating in so many different ways. Time, place, circumstances is there. Some people say, oh, you should not read anyone's books but Prabhupada's books. And if you do, well, you're committing some kind of, I don't know. There are some devotees who a little strong on that point. And I think it's within Srila Prabhupada himself. He says in many places, if you want to understand this particular topic, you should read the books of Rupa Goswami and so on and so forth. And why would we want to deny all our acharyas? Bhaktivinoda Thakur, for instance, has written so many literatures, so we should study them all. And His Divine Grace, Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasati Goswami Maharaj, he wanted all them books published, so I think we still have to do that in English. Sorry, you can't hear it. Okay, yeah. Sorry, my voice is... So that's one thing. Now, in regards to another part of the purport here, the modern scientists are also... you know, as we get into that topic. The modern scientists are also authorities. And it's true, to some extent. Is it not? Because everything anyone wants to know about anything in this world, they generally refer to the scientists, isn't it? For instance, this great disaster happening within the world, isn't it? So everyone is... isn't it, sir? Do you think so? A disaster, new variant, and there's so many things going on. So what is this going on? And everyone is offering great obeisances to the scientists who are saving the world, they say. But what perhaps is not unknown and still to be debated and not discussed so far, although touched upon a little by some scientists in the early poems, is where the difficulty came from in the first place. And there's a lot of indication, as we may, or you may or may not know, that gain-of-functional research was taking place by the Americans and the European scientists, and they happened to be investing in that very laboratory in Wuhan. So there's a good chance that scientists, in trying to understand the world around them, may have manipulated and added certain DNA structures to an existing variant and may have caused some problems. So these things are yet to be discussed and looked into, and many big organizations such as the World Health Organization are currently kind of doing so, but and nothing's clear. Because another aspect of the material world is that everyone's cheating. Everyone's cheating and everyone's a rascal. There's not many honest people out there. So to get the truth, because Prabhupada speaks about the truth here, it's very difficult to find the truth, isn't it? Very difficult, because you always get this opinion, that opinion, this one, and someone twists certain meanings. So where is the truth? Where does the truth lie? It lies in the heart of the pure Vaishnava, who is very humble and who is linked with the Supreme Lord. So it could be that Krishna has to fit. Like Krishna, he fixes everything. He is, after all, the whole creation is brought about by his arrangements. He is the Supreme Intelligence. Everything is going around by his intelligence. Everything we see is an intelligent arrangement. So if you look up, for instance, microscopic living beings, you'll find that even the scientists understand, oh, there's intelligence in these microbes have intelligence. Look it up online, microbe intelligence, you'll find, yes, microbes and viruses act in a very intelligent way, and the scientists can see that. So it could well be that Krishna has to fix everything, and he does that in very wonderful ways. Nature kind of heals itself. Why? Not because nature is impersonal, but is actually personal. Because everything of Krishna's energies is personal, including the Supersoul. The Supersoul is personal, is an aspect of divinity. But what aspect of divinity the Supersoul is? Well, it is one and different from Krishna, because Krishna lives in multidimensional space-time, material and spiritual. Therefore, if you go inside an atom, Krishna is there. But if you enter into the atom alongside Krishna, the whole of the creation is there, material and spiritual. So this is quite inconceivable, that how can Krishna be in one atom with all existence, spiritual and material, and be outside of it at the same time. So this is described, Maya Titamidam Sarvam Jagat Vyaptamurtina. Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, he tries to give an analogy about how he's present in everything, but at the same time he's outside of everything. And he gives the example of the ether, the space. Actually, ether is an interesting topic which is not really thoroughly understood by scientists. They try to figure out what the ether is. Even Einstein was a little bit skeptical about it. And what ether is and what it contains, some people think it contains electromagnetic energy in one aspect in its earlier functions. And so many things, they come up with these theories. But certainly, the Bhagavatam accepts the ether. So from the ether, I don't know, what did I... I can't remember why I got into that topic for a second. So ether, from ether comes air, and from air comes water, and so on and so forth. So Krishna is, he's within everything. So yes, I was talking about Mayatamadam Savam. So the wind, or the wind that's moving around within the... It stays within the ethereal planes. It stays within, although the wind moves around, it stays within the sky. It can't go out into space. So, but interestingly enough, the ether, which is some people might contemplate and posture that the ethereal plane, according to the Bhagavatam, is the finer and finer elements of what would be made up of the atoms, because the atoms are very small, and then if you break atoms up, they become even smaller, and if you break up the quarks and other things that the scientists can try to recognize, it becomes even smaller and more subtle, and ultimately coming to the ether. This is what the Bhagavatam indicates. And so far the scientists have not understood that point, but perhaps in later times they will. So Krishna is present everywhere, within every aspect of creation, and within the microbe of any virus. So anything you see, no one should be in fear. Oh dear, the coronavirus has come, we're all doomed. No, it's all under Krishna's full control. And people have different theories on how this will be resolved, but the interesting thing is that everyone's chanting Om right now, as you know, Om Ikran. And Om is an auspicious number, and it's the 15th letter of the Greek alphabet, and just so happens that that letter in Greek alphabet stands for Dharma and religion, which is quite interesting. So there could be some auspiciousness. about this virus Kurobi. And it could well be that it's mutated in such ways that it's going to, you know, some scientists thinking that it might well take over the previous Delta variant, which is sort of a man-made concoction, you could say. So Krishna is saving us all in so many different ways. So this knowledge of scientists, because they generally, the trouble with the scientists, they look at the objective world and then they begin to subjectify. So this is the problem for us, because we accept, Prabhupada says we accept, or men accept, what the scientists say as an authority. He's giving that as an example. We also accept authority. But our authority is based on disciplic succession. The scientific authority is based on subjectivity. Subjectivity. One scientist comes up with this theory, another one comes up with a theory, and they try to... This is a very subjective realm. So the subjective realm is never objective truth. But if the scientists look at something in an objective way and say, well, this is what we see, make of it what you will, then that's the honest way. But unfortunately, scientists look at the world and begin to subjectify about what they see, and they write God and intelligent design out the picture. But interestingly enough, those that are very much into honest science, they come up with, they define what honest science is. And they say, and I'll quote, "A scientific theory is a well-substantiated explanation of some aspect of the natural world based on a body of facts that have been repeatedly confirmed through observation and experiment. Such fact-supported theories are not guesses, but reliable accounts of the real world." So if someone comes up with a scientific theory, say, like Charles Darwin, which everyone seems to follow, and it's taught worldwide, and the whole of the Western civilization is built upon that theory. Make no mistake, the whole Western civilization is based on that theory, and the whole economic model of the world is based on that theory, and every single educational institution throughout the world, from infant school to junior school to senior school to college and university, is based on that theory. And it's not taught as a, it's not taught as a theory, it's taught as a fact. But such fact-based theories have to be confirmed through repeated observation and experiments. So this, if you study the theory of evolution, you'll find that it falls short of that in so many different ways. And many, many scientists today realize that that is the fact. And they question the theory, but it's going to take a long time for people to catch on, because the educational system is infiltrated in so many different ways. And people have been brainwashed in so many different ways from childhood. Remember, for instance, when you were at school, did you not see apes turning into men? Yes? You saw that. If you go to the Science Museum in London, the first thing you do when you walk in, you will find apes turning into men. So this is, and it's a beautiful building, very powerful. It looks like a church, doesn't it? Have you seen it? Looks like a church. This is the scientist. This is, we are, the church is your, this is your church, this is our church. And this is knowledge. Forget about what the religionists say, this is knowledge, because we can, but actually, if you examine what they're saying, is it fact-based theory or is it guesses? And the fact is, it's guesses. And there's no substantial evidence at all. And so fortunately today we have other scientists who are trying to point these things out, but it will take time. So the Krishna consciousness movement is also based on presenting scientific facts, what science is of civilization. What we see around us is order and intelligence, and we don't see anything happening by chance in our own lives. And if we delve deeply, those that delve deeply into science will see that follows through. So, in order for us to see this properly, we will have to develop divine eyes. We'll have to get the intelligence to see properly what Krishna is trying to point out to us. As the previous verse said, very clearly, only the purified soul can attain the perfection of associating with the Supreme Personality of Godhead in complete bliss and satisfaction of his constitutional state. So, part of understanding one's constitutional state, there's two aspects. There's the internal and external world. There's our own spiritual ras in the spiritual realm, you could say the internal life. But also to see how the world is working and why it works the way it does is very important as well. To see Krishna everywhere. Therefore, Prabhupada says in one lecture, don't see that tree, see Krishna. So Krishna is trying to encourage us to see things in relation to him. For instance, we're sitting in these bodies here. You got that body, you got that body, you got that body, you got that body. But who is manifesting this body? Who is manifesting? We generally, in conditioned consciousness, we think, oh, that's your body. But we don't think, no, it's a soul within the body who's been wandering all over the universes. And Krishna is creating that body. In some aspects, Śrīla Viśvanātha Chakravarti Maharaj is coming. In one aspect, you could say it's Krishna. I'm sitting here. Krishna's manifesting this body. Krishna's everywhere. Therefore, one indifference is there. We shouldn't overly emphasize the oneness, and we shouldn't overly emphasize the difference. The one that the Krishna, this body is being manifested by Krishna. I'm not manifesting his body, but in one sense I am because of my independent desires. The living entity is constantly desiring, and whilst desiring and acting, Krishna has to facilitate. Therefore, he's manifesting a body for that living being to manifest his different desires. It's a very complicated matter. But to see that in absolute truth, you have to be practicing Nishkama Karma Yoga. Because there's different aspects of which Krishna speaks in the Bhagavad Gita. You have to be free from furtive activity. You see? Because first of all, you have to learn what is Karma Yoga. You're suffering in the material world, do some religion. Okay, do some karma yoga. All right, yeah, we will do something auspicious and religious. We will try to follow some systems. We'll give a bit to God as well. So we'll enjoy, but we will do that in the association. We will do that karma yoga. We will enjoy ourselves, and we will give a little bit to God. Now, if you do that nicely, you can progress on to some gyan. You'll get little knowledge about some of these things. And real gyan means that you will begin to become, you will understand a little bit more about life, about consciousness. And you will not be in full knowledge. You may understand, you might see the equality of all living beings. And you might begin to be less fruitive. You might begin to do more piety, and you might be more inclined to higher aspects of knowledge. But that is not enough. Therefore, Krishna, he's encouraging Arjuna on the battlefield of Kurukshetra to engage in Nishkama Karma Yoga. That your nature, you must engage it solely in my service. You are a warrior, therefore fight for me. Don't worry about the fruits of your action, whether you're successful or you're not successful. This type of Nishkama Karma, which is done under the association of the pure Vaishnava, has to be done under the association of the pure devotee. If you do not link your activities with a pure devotee, you will not be able to properly practice Nishkama Karma Yoga. Otherwise, there'll be some mixture, there'll be some mixed bhakti going on. So this Nishkama Karma Yoga leads to very strong astanga or very strong meditation. And from that meditation and devotion, you'll be able to lift yourself further into the realms of devotion. Such devotion takes you to higher and higher and higher realms. So although Prabhupada mentions in the beginning of the purport here the direct and indirect processes, he mentions the indirect process here in terms of some people who worship the Garbhakshaya Vishnu, who's lying in the Garbha ocean, Hiranyagarbha. Those who worship Hiranyagarbha, they can purify themselves, and they end up in some of the higher planets. So this is called, you can say this is a gradual process. Now, who is this Garbhakshaya Vishnu? Well, in our culture, we know he's lying on the Garbha ocean. But in other cultures, the Christian cultures and the Muslim cultures, it could well be the case that indirectly or indirectly they're worshipping such a great, Hiranyagarbha, the Garbhakshaya Vishnu, who's lying there manifesting these universes. To them, he's the great Lord. So they worship in that way. So maybe some of them who are very dedicated in their meditation and their sacrifice. For instance, there's a group of nuns, they call themselves Brides of Christ, for instance. And there's other nuns as well that live in monasteries. If you look at the history, like, for instance, Catherine of Boulogne, she was a very dedicated nun. And there's another nun called Hildeberg von Bingen. Very, very dedicated, very deep people, write a lot of prayers. And if you listen to their prayers or you study their philosophies, it's very akin to our system here as well. Catherine of Boulogne, she wrote, 9 Steps to Divinity. So if you read them, you'll find it identical to us. So they may be worshipping the Lord in such a way. So what will happen to them? Well, according to the Bhagavatam, they could well end up in the higher planetary systems. And then in the higher planetary systems, they may enter into Satyaloka or Brahmaloka. And when the end of dissolution, when Brahma's life comes to an end, they can return to some of the Vaikuntha planets. They cannot go to Goloka Vrindavan, but they can go to some Vaikuntha planets. And some of them end up in some of the higher planets and below Satyaloka, but during the partial devastations of the universes, some of these planets are destroyed, and some of these beings can get on airplanes and they can fly off to Lord Brahma's planet. This is all described in the Vedas. So these are all quite incredible. But these things are going on higher dimensional planes, because we only exists within this four dimension, isn't it? Three or four dimensions. We don't know about other dimensions. So we can quite rarely accept other conceptions of higher dimensional space, which incidentally I've spoken about before, and is readily accepted by modern scientists, such as Lisa Randall, who's a Harvard professor. She speaks about multidimensional space-time as if it's a reality. So, you know, we're not the only ones that speak in this light. Even modern scientists who Prabhupada mentioned here are authorities. Well, this we can accept, yes. She's speaking about multidimensional space. The Vedas speak about multidimensional space, so she's correct in that. Why? Because it's corroborated in the Vedas. Anything that we can conceive of that is corroborated in the Vedas, we can say yes. This can be accepted. And even in the in these higher realms of these other planets, you'll find nature works differently. Laws of physics work differently in one place. In one part of the universe, it works like this. Time works differently. Laws work differently. Gravitation works. Everything works differently. And this is corroborated by even modern scientists mathematically. She's a theoretical physicist, but mathematics is something which can be accepted because mathematics works. And the origin of maths is another interesting topic. Maths is already there. And this is what great mathematicians will tell you. Maths is already there. It's not that we've made math. Maths is all around you. There's perfect mathematics and everything in nature. Why? Because there's intelligence behind it. So there is a gradual process given in the Vedas here of entering into the spiritual realm. But generally, Prabhupada is encouraging us to take the direct process. But the direct process is also quite long-winded, if you like. It can be very direct, but generally you have to go through karma yoga, through jnana yoga, and as you increase your jnana, then you'll come to nishkama karma, and then if you do nishkama karma, your jnana will increase more, and your devotion to Krishna will increase, and then when your devotion to Krishna increases, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has indicated, what is the platform of one who then enters into not sadhana bhakti, but ragatmika bhakti, the ragatmika marg, the spontaneous, because you've gone through your niskama karma, you're getting some knowledge, you're getting real fixed up on Krishna, you're hearing about his pastimes. What's your mind going to do then? Well, that's another process which has been delineated by our acharyas. And then you come on to the platform of this ragatmika marg, and Mahaprabhu, Jiva Goswami, Rupa Goswami, no, sorry, Raghunath Das Goswami indicates what is the qualification for one who is on that ragatmika marg platform. And the qualification he indicates is that one should be Najana Najana Nusundarim. That's the first. He should be Trinada Pisani Chanatu Pisani. He should be like that. And then he should be Najana Najana Nusundarim. Now, if he's honestly like that, he can begin to then enter into the higher realms of bhakti, and his meditation becomes very strong. So you can analyze yourself whether you're doing sadhana bhakti or whether you're doing ragatmika marg bhakti. But if the devotee's been around 20, 30, 40 years, I can tell you, my humble opinion, there's bound to be some devotees out there who are practicing such intense bhakti. We must have faith that this scientific process is going on, and these devotees have been following this process for 20, 30, 40 years. They're worth hearing from. They're actually tasting and relishing Krishna consciousness. When they hear the Leela pastimes of Radha Krishna, they enter into such leela and relishing to a degree. And of course, why? Because they've done all their sadhana, they've done their austerity, they're practicing controlling their mind and senses, they're sacrificing their time, and they're always thinking the Krishna Mamrava Moktato Majajino, they're always thinking, they're always endeavoring Satam Prasangamame Vili Sambaro Vantikritkana Rasana Guitar. They're associating with other sadhus, and they are Satatam Keti Yantamam Yantastra Drita Vrata. They're always fixed on this topic. Such devotees are worth endeavoring getting their association. So Krishna Conscious Movement is a movement, these days at least, of many different levels. In the early days it was one level, because there was only one pure devotee, wasn't there? Who was he? Yeah. Just making sure you're still awake. Yeah, he was the only, actually, but Prabhupada also said, ripe mangoes, unripe mangoes. So he once described all his devotees as pure because they were on that platform. So we should give ourselves some credit that we are trying to become pure. So this purity is very essential for us to fully understand all aspects of Krishna consciousness. And therefore, if we begin to follow the path properly and we take up the association of proper sadhus and hear from them, we will be like Arjuna, because Arjuna heard from Krishna. Arjuna was supposedly in illusion. He was not in illusion, but he was confused about his duty. I mean, wouldn't you be confused about your duty if you were in such a situation where you had to deal with friends and relatives and warriors on the other side that were supposed to be respected? Your religion has to be adhered to. Dharma must be adhered to. We cannot give up Dharma. This is what Arjuna's telling Krishna. How can you tell me to give up Dharma? So Dharma is very important. But also, giving up Dharma is also important. And therefore, Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, ultimately, give up religion. This is, again, this is Karma Yoga, Jnana Yoga, Nishkama Karma Yoga, higher realms of Astanga Yoga, where you're linking with Krishna. At that point, you go beyond Dharma, and you can carry out activities. And therefore, in the scriptures, it says that one who, even if he doesn't do his Dharma properly, it doesn't matter. If he does the supreme Dharma, then everything is taken care of automatically. So you cannot abuse that situation. But in time, if you're a grihastha or whatever situation you're in, you can slowly give up your responsibilities and not feel too bad about not doing. Otherwise, you can go on and on and on and on. Oh my wife, oh my grandchildren, oh my great grandchildren. I gotta make so much money. Oh, they might need money in the future. I must keep working. I will accrue lots of money, and with my money, I'll get so much blessings because they'll like me so much because I've got so much money in the bank. And when I die, they'll be very happy. And while I'm alive, they'll know. They're going to keep me happy. This is in the Bhagavatam. This is going on. Money and power is very money. Prabhupada says when he came to Krishna consciousness, I need money and I need men. And it's a fact, isn't it? If you haven't got money or men, what can you do? But some sadhus have no money or men and they're still very happy. But this is, you see. Actually, Srila Prabhupada's godfather was... He was such a scholar, such a renunciant, that he had a very poor man. Sometimes they couldn't even have rice every day, couldn't even afford to eat. When Prabhupada eventually came back to Mayapur, he gave Srila Swami money to build his mat. You see, because Prabhupada knew, because it wasn't, Srila Swami was not that way to build mats. But he was a very, very knowledgeable person, he probably knew it. But you see, in the in Mayapur now, there's that huge structure. So we're talking about money and men. Any great civilization throughout the world always built huge architectural structures because it's required. Because when people see such architectural structures, they think, wow, what is this? What is this culture? What's behind that? So this is why Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur had that vision, and why Srila Prabhupada has built that temple. That's an incredible feat to build. If you ever go to Mayapur and see that huge, huge building being put up, that is an amazing feat of one sadhu who came from India with $7 or whatever. And he collected up money and men, and he met Ambarish Ford, and he met George Harrison. I mean, we're sitting in George Harrison's house here. It's by George Harrison's Nishkama Karma, or his Karma Yoga, he gave this class. So actually, since the Krishna Conscious Movement founded in whenever it was in the United Kingdom, I mean, how many other structures have we got? Structures. We've got this structure. Okay, we've got the Haveli after 30 or 40 years. Anything else? Goshala, that's all right. Because such structures will very much attract everyone to us. I think Prabhupada wanted a big temple built. We have the Haveli, that's okay. But Prabhupada's huge temple being built, and the Soi Narayans, they got their big temple they built. So we really need temples in every town. We have a lot of work to do in that regard. So we need more money, more men. And we need more building going on. You gotta first get a building and then fill it. But we also need buildings, because buildings attract people, and that's what Prabhupada said. Yes, but people will come when they see huge buildings. Therefore, if a sadhu sits under a tree, no one's going to be attracted. Unless they're very philosophically inclined, then they may come and talk. But if you have buildings and huge structures and interesting things going on within them, then people come. So, for instance, in the Mayapur temple in India, what you have there is a wonderful structure, but what's in within it is the planetarium. And Sariputta Prabhu said that this is a great challenge. It's right in the middle of our Hare Krishna movement. We've got this planetarium. What does that planetarium stand for? So, within the buildings, I agree with you, we don't want empty buildings. We want interesting things going on within them. That's a fact. And you need to fill them with people. But why, when you fill them with, you will fill them with people when you have lots of interesting things to say to them. Don't just bring them in on the level of religion, because you'll only get a few people. You have to bring them on the level of the arts, sociology, sciences, everything. Because people are not into religion. His point, Tarina Prabhu's point, if you haven't caught on the internet, is that the temples are empty. And that's true, because in the early days, we filled them with devotees, right? And devotees were doing so many things. But we've slightly changed our plan now. We've slightly changed our plan, you see. That was the early days. Now, we encourage people outside to cultivate Krishna consciousness, and it's probably more like going towards the Catholic and the previous religious models, that you fill temples or buildings like this with Brahmins, and you train them up in Brahminical culture, and then when people come, whereas in the early days it wasn't really like that. I don't know, why is there some... The ditties are so beautiful, so beautiful. Like the radical, and Mahamantra is such a wonderful pujari. She dressed them ditties so wonderfully. And you can go there, you can cook Rajbhog, and cook. So I'm just saying to the devotees outside, you go and spend a month or two there, or 3 or 4 weeks there. You can help out with the pujari service, and you can get Mahamantra's association. And very spiritually invigorating for you. But yes, Tarun Prabhu, we have to change our model, you see, because this is a problem all around the world. ISKCON temples now, what do we do with them? So you have to make them interesting, and you have to diversify in your preaching to bring people in. Bring people in different ways, you know? For instance, in the Haveli here, we could have a science exhibition. Just like the planetarium, we could have a smaller planetarium here rigged up with 3D, laser lights and the whole universe. Then you can invite all the people from Oxford and Cambridge to come and see. Look at this. This is Vedic science. And you could have a intelligence design exhibition. You have so many things. Yes. Yeah, this kind of thing. We have to come up with new ideas of how to, and this book and Prabhupada's books are full of different aspects of life. It isn't all about just worshipping the deities and doing puja. It's about the whole philosophy, the science, politics of, for instance, if I said to you, what is our economic model? What is our economic strategy for introducing Vedic structures? Are we into free market economies or are we into controlled economies? What would we say? We must know. For instance, Tesco's are everywhere. What do we say about that? What would our leaders, what would Maharaj Parikshit say about Tesco? Would it allow global companies to would it allow global companies to thrive? Would it allow globalization? You know, these are things we have to enter into. So not only do we enter into science, we can enter into all these matters. Yes, civil living, high thinking, but also it means surely protecting local traders. In fact, there was one gentleman, interesting enough, there's this Indian boy, he lived in this wonderful village in India, and then he became educated, went to Bombay. Then he came back to his village, he's making a film about the modern world and in comparison to the life that he led in the village, which is something that Hare Krishnas are into, simple living, high thinking. And he's making this wonderful film, and he's showing the love. And one thing he mentioned in particular was local economies, which Prabhupada used to speak about all the time. Local economies are so essential. And we know that globalized companies have destroyed local economies worldwide. All these people coming in, these migrants coming in from, why? Because their economies are being destroyed. So the demons are in charge. So Hare Krishna movement has to wake up and it has to comment on what the Vedic view is of science, what is Vedic view is on sociology, what it is on economics, what it is on the art, and so on and so forth. These things were waiting for people to come. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, one cow, one man, one planet. So go on YouTube and look it up and look up. Yeah. Yeah, localization, simple living, but today we are being encouraged in a different lifestyle thinking that this will give us happiness. And anyway, Prabhupada has spoken about all these things in the Bhagavatam. So this, why? The essence, actually in this film, the essence is that when this gentleman came back to his village, you know what he did? He walked into his village and he picked up his grandmother, like a child. And such a one. This is consciousness, it's love, it's beauty. This is the essence of life. It's beautiful, loving exchanges of, and that's what's going on in the spiritual realm. So Vedic culture and what Prabhupada is trying to introduce and what our acharyas are trying to tell us is that consciousness is the essential element of life, not economic development and satisfying bodies and minds. That's the demoniac way of life. And therefore, I was saying some other time that when Uddhava went to Krishna sent Uddhava to Vrindavan, and he said to Krishna, Krishna said to Uddhava, don't go on the path where the elephants try to kill me, because the devotees never walk on the same path that the demons walk. So this economic model that we have now, this is the path of the demon that the demons walk on. The Hare Krishna movement and those that profess to be part of this movement can never walk on that path, but rather they should practice nishkama karma and cultivate local trade, local businesses, which are obviously environmentally friendly, and create good communities amongst ourselves and care and love. And therefore, if any of our children want to get married or they want some job or some community, they can live within our community and they can live very nicely and they can feel cared for. Anyway, I think I've spoken enough today. Thank you very much. Jai Srila Prabhupada, Jagat Guru, Sevinsa Bhagavan, Hare Krishna.